Lake Effect Weekend continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Bonnie North. In the 20th century, medicine was strictly concerned with treating illnesses. The medicine of the 21st century is about wellness. Those are the opening lines of the new book, Crossing the Healing Zone, written by Milwaukee psychiatrist Dr. Ashok Bedi. A Jungian psychoanalyst, Bedi says that to achieve wellness, we must merge the best practices of both Western and Eastern medicines to achieve healing of the body, mind, and spirit. His book combines modern medical teachings, complementary treatments and techniques, traditional psychology, physics, and spirituality to offer practical tips for boosting health levels. It's the result of more than 30 years of practice after having trained in India and later at Oxford in England. Bedi tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce how the Jungian perspective differs from traditional psychiatry and why that has made all the difference for his patients.
Well, for many years, I practiced as a general adult psychiatrist doing traditional psychiatry, and it really did not touch my soul. It's like you're putting the fire out, but the gas leak was not plugged. So I tried to do Freudian analysis and get some deeper training, and it still did not touch my patients and their lives. Till I said, so there's something deeper than this we must find. And so I, in desperation, I moved to my Eastern spiritual wisdom and started to kind of not integrate that without much ado, just gently making that part of my own paradigm, not patients, but my own. And suddenly I started to see some major improvement in my patients and their lives. So I decided to do a systematic study of spirituality and medicine. And the only depth psychological tradition that honors that is Carl Jung. A Zurich psychoanalyst was a collaborator of Freud.
Explain what that style is.
Right. Sigmund Freud thought that you have mental illness or problems because you repress your sexuality, which is hardly a problem in the West at this time with Viagra revolution. So what Jung thought is it's not just the sexuality that you repress, but when you repress your spirituality, your creative drive, your altruistic drive, your wish for connection with something deeper and sacred in your own life, that is when you start to heal. And when I did that, it really started to make a big impact. So that is what if Jungian tradition is to go much deeper into one's ancestral wisdom, one's sacred and creative life. The favorite saying that Jung had, which I still like, is vocatus aeternum vocatus, dux erit in Latin, which means bidden or unbidden. The sacred is present in and all around you. And when we make a conscious living connection with the sacred, then we start to heal. And I think the whole Eastern healing tradition is about that legatio, that connection with the sacred.
Is there a difference here between what we're talking about, the sacred, the spirituality, mm-hmm. compared with the popular understanding of that, particularly as it's related with religion?
I have no major interest as a physician in religion. I would say I'm squarely disappointed in all traditions. However, not because of religion, but in spite of it, it points a path to the divine, to the sacred. When we confuse it with the path, then we are in trouble.
I just wonder if when dealing with your patients, you have to help them see that difference between the sacred and perhaps their understanding of it through
of
a particular
religion.
Faith.
Absolutely. I think we never talk about religion. We never even talk about so-called, you know, spirituality. But it comes to them through their own. All our medical problems, all our psychiatric illness, all our relationship tangles, all our hang-ups or complexes, all our accidents and synchronicities are all our dreams, all our active imagination, all our creative products, whether you're doodling on a paper or sort of drawing something artistic or creating a work of art. All these are whispers of your soul. Some deeper part of you is trying to communicate something to you, and when you decode it, understand it, then it becomes sacred. It means it becomes a bridge to a deeper part of your consciousness. In Jungian psychology, we call it a bridge between your ego, your outer consciousness, to a deeper part of you, which you can call soul if you wish, but basically it's a center of your deeper total personality. So when we make this ego self axis, then person starts to heal. That is the meaning of all our symptoms. They are trying to ligate, bridge us to the deeper part of us, which is the definition of what yoga means, to yoke with something deeper in you, with the sacred, with the divine. And I think without using those words, you really must just call it connecting with your own depths, with your own deeper, authentic nature. all our medical and psychiatric symptoms, all our illnesses are really a little glimpse of our totality. And the task of the analyst or a therapist is to help them construct the memory of the rest of that magnificent structure in their soul, which is the giver of life and health and wholeness and sobriety.
Is that uncovering, is that where the healing zone comes into play?
That is that the discovery of the totality of your being is like one of the reviewers of my book says, you know, it's your present life, your today's life as it is just this page in the book of your life. And when you help your client construct the whole book, not just the whole chapter, but the rest of the book, then you have a context of the today's page, what this is all about. And the book outlines some of the techniques, methods you can use to construct that total narrative about yourself. So that's the healing zone. That's the zone you connect with.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of those techniques.
Yes.
You know, which are some of the practical ones, and which do you think people might be a little hesitant? I mean, you know, there are lots of talk of chakras and yantras. How do you get even the skeptics to kind of buy into this idea of the connection between the sacred and the body?
Well, I think you really don't have to buy it. You can just start experiencing it. And before you know it, you will attend to it at the level at which you are initiated and prepared. So I think for an average participant who wants to be part of their own healing paradigm and support their medical treatment through self-help paradigm, through empowerment, you can start with just simple breath regulation twice a day. If you want to move to the next level, you could do meditation, which is basically a very simple technique which I teach my patients all the time. And if you still want to go to the next level, you can practice mindfulness. In the book, I established the neuroscientific and evidence-based context of all these treatments. And then if you want to still go to the next level, you can use neurofeedback, which is a very established medical treatment. Our Air Force uses it. Israeli Air Force uses it. So, and it's now prevalent in all major centers in this country, including Harvard. If you want to still go deeper, you can use music and for neuro-linguistic programming or for rehabilitation, and it is used in intensive care units in Australia, in this country, and I've given evidence and research. But how to create, I've talked about a technique of creating your own playlist on iPod and how that can help you reset your rhythm in a 24 hours. So someone who's an addicted person who's having cravings can use that iPod playlist to reboot their mood. And my grandson helped me with that, and one of my friends. So that is something that you can do even if you don't believe in yantras and tantras and all the exciting stuff of kundalini balancing, which is nothing other than balancing your sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. If you want to do an experiment, if you want to do your pulse right now, that is the easiest biofeedback you can do. Just measure your own pulse and do something to bring it back, whether you bring it back through sitting quietly and doing meditation or breath regulation or music or just a walk in with your dog. So that is something you can do. And I talk about some simple methods in my book that you could start attending to in your day-to-day life and support your medical care. For example, there is unlimited coverage for breath regulation in your insurance. There is no copay, no deductible.
I wonder if when you were writing the book and you included all of that information, the scientific evidence backing up the importance of maintaining that healthful balance.
Yes.
If you were, in a sense, anticipating perhaps, you know, or maybe trying to answer some of the questions that people have of, well, does this really help? Does this really do anything?
Well, I think, you know, you can monitor it yourself. And that evidence is presented in the book as to, you know, you used, for example, a simple thing like a prayer. It does not matter to whom you pray. And you do prayer, and you found in Duke University that when they used intercessory prayer, someone praying on your behalf even, not you praying yourself, the outcome following intensive care unit treatment for cardiac illness was much better than if you did not have anyone praying for you. Now, right there is the evidence. There is a lot of research. My friend David Rosen, who's a young analyst, just retired from Texas A&M. They did this study, genetic study, genomic study on medical students, and they found that those students who have what they now call a God gene, meaning a certain gene which I've outlined the number in the book, what number gene that is, they have much better treatment outcome with their patients because they take a spiritually balanced approach, not a religious, but a spiritually informed approach, some acknowledgement of the sacred dimension. Their medical outcome of their patients is better. So when your practitioner is more spiritually balanced, your outcome is going to be better. So I think the evidence is right there. We can't argue with the evidence. And so I present that to you as something that, you know, will speak for itself. If you look at mindfulness, there are several thousand studies on mindfulness.
Now, what exactly is mindfulness? Just describe
sure.
that.
Okay. Well, research right here in UW Medicine by Dr. Richard Davidson, who has collaborated with His Holiness the Dalai Lama for the last 35 years, his research has conclusively shown that when you practice this mindfulness and meditation, your brain waves are reset from chaotic beta waves, which the scientists call the monkey mind, to alpha waves, which is nice, solid, steady, rhythmic waves of 8 to 12 per second. And at that time, you go into a parasympathetic mode. Your pulse, your blood pressure calm down. Your respiration is tranquil. Your mind is more centered. You don't have cravings if you're an alcoholic in the alpha mode. So when you practice mindfulness, then, for example, you move into this parasympathetic balance and you connect with the sacred energy around you, if you want to call it that. You don't have to use the word sacred. You call the healing energy around you. Okay, so what is mindfulness? Mindfulness is studying the six obstacles between you and the sacred in the moment. Then you are much more connected to the sacred around you. It's direct connection. Then you listen to the music of the cosmos. For example, Stephanie, did you know that as you're sitting right now, still, the earth on which you and I sit is moving at 1,000 miles an hour on its own axis. At the same time, it is moving at 176,000 miles an hour around the sun. And our solar system is moving at a speed of 1.2 plus million miles around the center of the galaxy. And the scientists have still not calculated the speed at which our galaxy is moving in relationship to the center of the universe as it is being created. This is from my brother, who is a nuclear physicist, so if the numbers, you'll have to check with him, but you can Google them, I suppose. So all that energy vortex around you can work and impact you if you just sit still.
Okay, but the idea of sitting still, everyone talks about how everyday life gets more and more hectic, more and more frenetic. It's pretty difficult to find those moments to be able to sit and quiet and center yourself to feed into that.
For 15 minutes twice a day, that's all. Would you rather sit still for 15 minutes twice a day and be contemplative, or wait till you and I have to be in intensive care fixing our heart because of the toxicity of the modern world? So I think the choice is ours to make. That is the whole idea, that would you rather not take a little sip from this cosmic elixir and heal yourself, or wait till you create so much toxin that we don't even have time for twice a day, 15-minute break, to reconnect with our sacred ground?
What I find so fascinating is this isn't just talking about benefits on the psychological or the psychiatric level. This is talking about even wellness within our own bodies, the
physical
manifestation.
Hardcore medical issues, diabetes, cancer, autoimmune diseases, all sort of problems. When you start to put yourself in a more positive parasympathetic balance, move from that edge of creating a toxic waste site, a hazardous site in your body, becoming a, what is the word called, the hazmat site, to make it into a nice place of healing and recovery and wellness. I think that's a choice we have to make. And I think it's a tragedy that we feel that we can't even spend half an hour a day to tune into that cosmic, this spiritual reset for our own well-being.
As a Jungian psychiatrist who's been practicing this for many years, what do you think the growth in popularity of activities like yoga and meditation is saying about people maybe subscribing more to this tradition?
Well, I think I'm much more hopeful than a mere trend in this New Age phenomenon. I'm not a New Age person. I'm very medically boring, mainstream person. So unless something is evidence-based, it really does not pass muster and I would not implement it with my patients. But I'm very moved by how, in spite of recession and problems out there and unemployment and global conflicts, how in day-to-day life on the street, people are gradually turning into their soul, to a deeper place in themselves. Perhaps our fiscal and war problems in the last 10, 15 years have opened the window for us as a nation and as a people to a deeper purpose, meaning, and context to our lives. We are moving beyond our paychecks and into a deeper dimension of our purpose. I'm also glad to see that people use this adversity, this dark night of the soul, to recalibrate and come out stronger and more engaged with their meaning and purpose of their life. That's the gift of depression.
Well, Ashok Betty, thank you so much for coming in and sharing Crossing the Healing Zone from Illness to Wellness with us.
You're welcome, Stephanie.
Dr. Ashok Betty is the author of the new book, Crossing the Healing Zone, From Illness to Wellness. A Jungian psychoanalyst, he serves as the president of the Carl G. Jung Institute of Chicago and leads annual training in India. A board-certified psychiatrist, Dr. Betty is also a clinical professor in psychiatry at the Medical College of Wisconsin, and he practices at the Aurora Psychiatric Hospital and Aurora Healthcare Network. He'll be doing a book signing and reading at Boswell Book Company on Wednesday, July 17th. He spoke with Stephanie Lecce. Are you at the end of your rope? Well, Old World Wisconsin can make some more. We'll learn all about how when our next installment of It's a Material World on Lake Effect Weekend comes your way next.